Welcome to episode 195 of Chess Journeys, Tales of Adult Improvement. Here at Chess Journeys, we love to explore the glories of ratings gain, but we're going to be realistic and say we're usually looking at plateaus and sometimes the pits of despair below that. I hope that's not you. I do want to thank our Patreon subscribers. You can help the podcast at Patreon Chess Journeys. Our queen level supporters are Tim Everett, Scott D4B6 Joe, Matt Bush, Jay Garrison, Donovan Rich Burgess, Brandon Hallside, Jeff Peterson, Tobias Rex, Bob Berger, Nicholas Harrigan, Rich Bradley, Fenner, Fletcher Ray, Nathan Peterson, Christian Glaw, Andrew Rimmer, Travel Mocha, Mohammed Ibrahim, Ian Mason, Adam, Will P, Kenny Gray, Matthew Siebert, Mark Yasserball, David Clark, and king level supporter Ian Samples. If you want to appear on the show, fill out the Google form in the show notes. That's where I got my guest this week. That's where I got my guest last week. I'm always looking at the Google Forms. And if you're like, hey, man, I submitted a Google Form 3 years ago, just resubmit it. I'm just going to be honest. I don't have time to go through all 200 of them. I am looking at the newest one. So just resubmit. Please, please do so. If you're interested in getting better at chess, which I feel like you are, Noel Studer has a few amazing programs. His course, the Simplified Chess Improvement System, is where he's putting his primary energy. And you can get a link for that with a discount in the show notes below. And if you like watching people play rapid games, I've got my Road to 2200, where I'm struggling to reach 2200 lead chess. And it's been a pretty upward trajectory of late. Those comments of like, maybe you should retire from chess, you're terrible. They're going away now as I'm actually getting some wins. It's kind of nice. I also do have my chess book course out, Chess Journeys Tactics Workbook, Turning Knowledge into Skill. People seem to be liking it. I had a really nice new review this week. So much so that even though I haven't talked to Chessable, I'm already working on the sequel. I don't know if they'll want it. They might be like, dude, I don't know what you're doing. But we're working on it. And I do have a sponsor for the show, Chessnut. They make a variety of electronic chess sets. They were gracious enough to send me a Chessnut Pro. It is right off screen to my left. It is Monday night. Therefore, I will be playing a longer game on my Chessnut Pro, one of the favorite parts of my week. And so if you're thinking like, hey, how do I get more over-the-board chess in? I mean, it's a great option. An even better option is finding a local club that meets every night of the week. I don't know if any of us have access to that. I don't. So I play on my Chessnut, which is trying to emulate that as best as it can. Be sure to use the code KevinSkull if you'd like a discount. Okay, let's get to our guest of the hour. We have Xander. He's a mathematician with two children who is trying to get better at chess despite all the things going on in his life. Xander, welcome to the show. And have you had a chance to play any chess yet today?
I have, and thankfully I listened to a few of your episodes, so I knew to be prepared for that.
Ah, darn. No one's ever ill-prepared for that question. It's too bad. Okay, well, what did you do to play your chess?
So every morning I get up and do a little bit of studying, and I try and sneak in a game a few times a week. I got a rapid game in this morning that was one of those, I'm winning, and then I think I'm still winning, and then things go great and I win, and then I reviewed it afterwards, and I gave my opponent a lot of chances to win it on the way.
Yeah, I've had a couple games where I'm like, I think this is my masterpiece, and then the engine is like, you're terrible at this game, and I'm like, okay, it's not my masterpiece, thank you. Okay. And so you said you tried to get a rapid game in every day?
No, I don't usually get them in every day. I try to get in something like 3 or 4 a week.
Okay.
That's yeah, like number. 15 plus 10, something like that.
Okay, cool. And I guess let's start with your background. Did you play chess as a child or did you come to chess as an adult?
Yeah, so like a little bit of both. So I learned when I was a kid, like a lot of people. And then I have like a few memories from my childhood of playing chess, but nothing that particularly stands out. I started getting into math when I was in like middle school, high school. Mm. And so hanging out with, you know, the mathematicians, there were always people playing chess. And I would like jump in and play every once in a while and just get completely destroyed. And but, you know, I carried around that feeling like if you're good at math, you're supposed to be good at chess. So I felt like I must just not be good enough at math yet.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. So there's so much of a correlation in your mind that if you're getting crushed at chess, then you're not good enough at math.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, that just persisted for a long time. And I just decided, OK, maybe I'm just not good at chess. So fast forward to when I'm in my mid-30s. This is sort of a bit of a tangent, but it'll come back and answer the question. So we went on this vacation, and we had an Airbnb, that had two awesome things. One, it came with a live rabbit. So wow. We had a pet at this Airbnb that we took care of for 2 weeks. It was
did awesome. You have to care? Oh, for 2 weeks you had to care for it.
Yeah. So when we were out, the host would come in and like feed and clean the cage and stuff, but we just got to hang out with it and watch the Olympics with the rabbit. It was dope.
Wow. That's cool.
And then the other thing was it had an Uno deck on the coffee table when we came in. So I played an absurd amount of Uno with my kids for 2 weeks.
I hate that game so much. Okay.
So I came back from this trip and I'm laying on the couch one night and my son comes over to me and says, hey, let's play some Uno. And I was like, buddy, I am Uno'd out. Pick any other game out of the cabinet and I will teach it to you. So he comes over with a chessboard. Ah. He's 7 years old. I teach him the moves. He gets into it. Literally 2 weeks later, he squarely beats me.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, and I remember a little bit of the game. I'm chasing him around with my queen and I gave him one move where he wasn't in check and he back rank mated me.
Well, why isn't he on the podcast? Why am I talking to you?
Yeah, fair enough. He recently switched high schools and I was like, hey, dude, your new high school has a chess club. And he said, I don't think I can do that to my reputation, Dad.
Oh, that's funny. Okay.
He's squarely in that phase now.
Okay. That's tough. It's tough.
And yeah. So after he beat me, I sent him to bed and, you know, I was like, good job, buddy. And he goes off to bed and my wife is sitting there and she said, so did you just let him win? I said, no, my ego is in tatters. That was really bad.
I'm so bad at math. I can't even beat a seventh grader.
No, not even a seventh grader, 7 years old. It's just like what, second grade or something. Yeah, it was really bad.
Oh, man. I'm glad you were able to divorce your chess skill from your math skill by then, because that would be hard to stomach.
Yeah, no, it was rough. So I went to the library and got the Complete Idiot's Guide to Chess.
Okay.
That actually was a solid read as a first book.
Yeah.
And then just started acquiring books and playing lots of games. And, you know, here we are now.
So did this ego-crushing loss turn you into an obsessed chess player, or did it just kind of start you on like the beginnings of your journey? You got a little bit better and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't do anything without turning it up to 11. So I went straight to obsession. Yeah. But I think I managed to internalize like immediately all of, well, not internalize, like I just reinvented all of the standard adult improver things. Like, I don't like playing timed games, right? That's where I was a long time ago, right? I'd only play daily games because I'd always get crushed in timed games. But mm-hmm. then when I get crushed, it'd be like, well, I had a winning position. So I was winning.
Yeah.
yeah, there was that one. There was the, I don't like rating, so I'm just not going to play rated games. Like, you know, so I didn't play a lot of games. I just did a lot of puzzles and read lots of tactics books and things.
But it sounds like you're missing one of the key pillars of learning 30 moves deep opening theory.
Yeah, but I did it the way that you do it nowadays, where you watch Gotham chess videos and learn the trappy lines, right? And I had somebody recommended a Bruce Pandolfini book, the Traps and Zaps book, so I knew all the trappy openings.
Okay.
Yeah,
you need lots of traps, just maybe not how to play like solid develop your pieces chess.
That's right. And like, I had a few people around, like some neighbors that I would play with, but I like was rapidly so much better than them that it didn't matter that I wasn't studying the right things.
Yeah. That makes sense. Okay. So you're playing some daily games. You are doing some studying. It sounds to me like you're having fun with chess. Like, this sounds like a great, not even worrying about ratings, crushing all the neighbors. That's how I want to play chess.
Yeah, and I was taking my kids to chess tournaments through them, so I was like meeting parents, but I was finding like nobody who was as obsessed with it as I was, so I couldn't find anybody to play seriously with. So that was just kind of, that's what it was for about 5 years or so.
Okay, and was your child going to actual scholastic events, or was it like, you know, fun chess tournaments?
No, so we were living in the DC area at the time, and there were some scholastic events around. There was like this one school in Virginia, blanking on the name, they were called like the Silver Knights or something, like maybe.
Oh yeah, I think I've heard of them.
McLean, Virginia, I think. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we would go to a few of their tournaments, and the kids at that tournament were so absurdly strong. Like, you go and just get the floor mopped with you.
So
we'd go to some of those, and then there were some local ones at like libraries that we'd go to, mm-hmm. and there was a chess club with lots of kids in it that I would take my kids to. So I just kind of had chess in the air for a lot of years.
Yeah, that sounds fun. So were they pretty serious about chess? Like, they had a rating? Were they like studying and trying to get better? Or was it kind of like, chess is just a fun thing I do?
So I have twins, and my daughter was very much like, no, chess is just a fun thing I do sometimes. My son also has the obsessive bug, and I got him like a child's guide to chess or something like that. That was like a it was like if you took Chess Kid and married it with like a normal chess book. And so he would set up positions and look at that stuff. He got really into it, loved playing blitz games and whatnot. He played quite a lot for a few years and then just kind of dropped it.
That's cool. How far was he able to get?
I think he's like 11 or 1200 blitz on chess.com, and he could never slow down enough when he was playing rated games. And so, I think he's like 500 or something USCF.
I also feel like more and more that kids are so underrated. It's absurd when they usually play each other because there's not really a way to grow this rating. My daughter is rated, she's rated almost 500 now. She gained 100 points her last tournament, but she played a kid. She was 400. That kid was rated 120. And they played like 25 perfect moves until one of them hung a piece. But when I look at it, I was like, this looks like the game of at least like a 1300. That dude is rated 120. It's just madness. Like when you like, I don't know. Our whole rating system is just like this disaster.
Wait. So, how many rated games does she have that she managed to gain 100 points in one tournament? That can happen?
Yes. Oh yeah. Yep. If you have a good enough tournament, that happens.
Wild. Okay.
Yeah. I've done it like twice now.
Well, my most recent tournament, I did that. I got 130 points in my most recent tournament, and I kind of want to just walk away and be like, I solved chess. We're done here.
Okay, we'll talk about your ratings graph in a bit because I have a lot of questions for you. Not a lot of questions, but I think there's some interesting stuff going on there for sure. Okay, so we'll finish up with your children. So they were into chess, at least your son was, and then he just, like people do, they cycle in, cycle out, and he's currently cycled out.
Yep.
Okay, but who knows? Maybe he'll be
Affected the
back
state of
sometime.
affairs. The PlayStation has taken him over to various other games.
Okay, yeah, my daughter is similar in that she still loves chess. But if she could go to dress to impress tournaments, that's what she would be doing.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay. So this sounds very interesting that you're in the DC area. I have to imagine they have lots of adult tournaments, but for like 5 years, you're not taking that step, even though your children are. What's kind of holding you away from playing in tournaments?
Yeah, so one part of it is just time, right? Little kids. I think I was so the only tournaments I was really aware of were like the weekend tournaments where I knew you had to commit a couple of days, and that just seemed like a non-starter. I already travel for work sometimes, so like am I going to cash in husband points to do that? Oh, come on, you have a ledger in your
Well, I
house.
know this well.
Yeah.
I got none left. They're all cashed in.
I hadn't discovered quads tournaments yet, so that was still in my future. But the other part of it was, again, the thing I've heard on a lot of podcasts with adults, which is this like, well, I'm not ready yet. Like when I finish this book, I'll be ready, or when I have this online rating, I'll be ready, or something like that. Yeah, that was a big hurdle.
I don't know if regret is the right word, but do you feel like once you got into tournaments, you were like, oh, wow, I was ready whenever. Like there's no such thing as being ready. I could have just played whenever I wanted to.
Ooh, that's an interesting question. I think yes. I think I could have just jumped into tournaments a whole lot sooner, especially again now that I know about quads tournaments where you can go just, have a banger of a day and call it. That's
Yeah, exactly. It's really interesting. I'm looking at your ratings graph, and it looks like all of your tournaments, well, not all, a lot of them are in Maryland. And then your first one is in California. Were you on one of these business trips where you were like, hey, well, I'm here, I'll do this? Or was it like, I'm gonna fly to California for fun?
It was a business trip, and I had a weekend in between two conferences, and rather than come home, I decided to just
Perfect.
go to San Francisco a little early for the second conference. But the thing that I tied to that was, and this was my first tournament. It was like, if I'm ever going to get over this, it needs to be special somehow. So
Okay.
I played at the Mechanics Institute, which is the oldest continuously running club in the country, is my understanding. It's like old, paneled dark wood. It's a super cool place. And it was a 5-round Swiss. I think it was a 5-round. And I absolutely got devastated at this tournament. I went in so confident. It was one of these things where it's like, I'm pretty sure I'm a 1200, so I'll just come out of this like a 1200, no
Oh,
problem,
okay.
right?
What was your evidence that you were pretty sure you were 1200?
Yeah, so there are lots of books that I have and that I've read that will say like, this particular these positions are for this rating, and I would like do okay in that rating, right? And I suspect it's one of those things where like the good moves I was making were 1200, but the bad ones were like 400.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that tournament was entertaining. The first game I played, I was up a bishop pretty quickly. And I was feeling really good about it. And I got to one of those positions where you have a couple of choices to make in a tactic.
Yeah.
And I picked the one that allowed an in-between move and just like
Oh.
lost the bishop back, right? And
Oh,
then something time scramble, and it ended up in a draw. And that was the only value I got out of that tournament. I lost the next four.
okay.
In the final game, I hung a queen on like move five. I was like bleary-eyed tired. I'd
Yeah.
never been exhausted by an experience in my life.
Yeah.
I hung the queen, my opponent looks at it and just goes,
Was
it hurts so much.
it a little kid also?
He was like 12. He wasn't a
Wow.
little kid, but yeah, it was bad.
That's funny. Yeah, that's tough. I mean, I think that's one of the things people you can't quite get until you do your first like full weekend tournament.
Yeah.
The last round is just like who is still alive?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
This is gonna sound really weird. I often like mark the last round as like my moment to win one, where I'm like, all right, I'm gonna be well rested. I'm gonna be in a good headspace. My opponent's gonna be like ready to just die, and then I'll win. And it's happened a lot of times. So yeah, it's
Right.
okay. So you come out of that tournament with a rating much lower than you thought you would be and hoped you would be. Was there any thoughts of like, ah, oh, forget this stupid game, I'm out?
No, none at all.
Ooh,
Yeah, I
okay.
was definitely licking my wounds, but it's so okay. So one of the things I bring to chess from math is that I'm very often in the dark. Like I don't understand something. That's the typical situation for a research mathematician is you're just confused.
Huh, okay.
And then you get, here and there you get these breakthroughs where you understand something more than you did before.
Oh,
And
yeah.
so that was one of those experiences in chess where I was like, I am so confused as to why I just lost this tournament. We're going to need to figure this out. Now, with math, I'd never had my ego on the line when I'm confused. So that was a new experience, feeling bad about yourself while being confused.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I did a bunch of reading after the tournament. Like I think I just Googled like lost my first chess tournament. What do I do?
Okay, that's a good Google. I like that.
And I found a bunch of blog posts that were giving various thoughts on things. And what I ended up concluding over a few hours of reading was that I probably just needed to drill basic tactics way more. Like I was doing hard calculation, but I was missing basic stuff, right? And that seemed to align with the tournament. So I grabbed Susan Polgar's books, the Chess Done Right series or whatever they're
Yeah, the
called.
five book series.
Yeah, so I read three of those in pretty short succession.
Okay, nice. Yeah, they're pretty easy books, but also helpful.
Yeah, no, they're really, yeah, I found them to be, and you kind of have to lean into the easiness of it, right? Because in a lot of blitz games, for example, or even rapid games, you're going to have moves where you look at it and go, no, I think you just hung a piece, and maybe let me see if I can take it.
Especially like under 1,000. That's I feel like that's how every game my child plays is someone hang something. Did you see it?
Yes.
Right. And oftentimes the answer is no, which is very maddening, by the way. Like we're putting her games in the database, and it'll be like, okay, and then you took his bishop here. And he's like, my dog be like, no, I castled. And I'm like, but the bishop is hanging. She's like, it is? Oh, I didn't see that. And I'm like, okay, castles it is. Okay. So we're getting back to the basics after this. It looks like you got back after it pretty quick. So was that intentional? Were you like, all right, now I'm in, I'm hooked, I'm playing lots of tournaments, or like what happened there?
No, 100%. Yeah, I was totally hooked. I wanted to figure it out. And I set a goal for myself of trying to play like a tournament a month, which seemed
Okay.
reasonable given my schedule. And it was around then that I did a bunch of searching around and found some quads tournaments in the area, which
Okay.
again seemed much more manageable. What did so you're looking at my graph. What was my rating after that first tournament?
It was 774.
Ouch. Okay.
Yeah.
Brutal.
So yeah, not the rating you wanted, which is
Nope.
fine,
Nope, but the rating I deserve.
we all start somewhere. I think also most everyone's first rating is underrated because there are so many elements, right? It's not just simply your chess rating. It's like Your ability to play chess in a stressful environment with someone sitting across from you and a time control you're not used to, maybe being hungry, definitely being tired, being more stressed than usual, maybe adjusting to 3D instead of 2D. Like, it's a lot of stuff.
You're reminding me, actually, I thought I was being clever and like planning out where I was going to go get food during that tournament. Like, I knew that out and around the corner there was a Starbucks. And so I ordered a coffee and like a sandwich between a couple of the rounds. And I walked over there and the Starbucks was closed. For some reason, they took my order, but like didn't tell me they were closed.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's
horrible. All about that.
I've never had that happen before. That's horrible. Yeah. And then did you go the next round not being fed, or was it just more stressful to get some food?
I think it was just more stress. Like, you know, I was in San Francisco, so I just walked a block and found another place to get stuff. But it was, you know, I was like annoyed and I was like, I guess I have to follow up and figure out how to get this $8 back.
Okay. Yep. That too. And I've definitely had rounds where it was like, I had a very small amount of time. Like in my last tournament, I had to take a bye because I finished the tournament round and they're like, cool, the next one starts in a minute now. And I was like, yeah, no, I can't. I can't do that. I'm not ready. I'm hungry. I'm not in the right headspace. I went and got some food, and an hour later, I was like, all right, I'm ready. They're like, well, you know, we're well into the round, buddy. It doesn't work like that. So, yeah. Okay. So you get back in, you know, you start doing once a month for a few months. It looks like you're having some pretty good success. Are you happy in this period with what's happening?
Yeah, I'm having a great time in that period. I was trying out a couple of different places to play. I was meeting lots of people. There's some people from work that I was playing with a bunch. I had a couple of friends at work that I would play Blitz with at lunch. So yeah, that was a fun time. And somewhere in there, I found a chess club to go to once a week. So I was like building some community up around it, which was
Great. What did you guys do at the chess club? Was it more like hang out, play Blitz, or were you guys playing rated games? What were you doing with that?
Yeah, so there's sort of two kinds of players at this club. One of them, they just play Blitz and sometimes even like weird variants like duck chess and things like that.
We just goof around.
We just have fun.
Yeah.
And there's a few other people who play slow games, but not on a clock. And I'll sometimes sit down and play with them if I'm getting ready for a tournament. And, you know, I don't get any of the time management pieces of it, but you still get the look for good moves and really think things through kind of games.
Yeah. I found that I can't play without a clock. I have too much distraction of being like a good citizen. And so I'm always like, I need to move quickly despite not having a clock. And then my opponents will be like, I'm going to take 18 minutes on this move. And I'm like, wait, it doesn't work. If you take 18 minutes every move, we're going to be here for 3 days. And I, on the other side, I'm only taking 12 seconds because I feel pressured to move. It just never quite works out for me.
Yeah, it doesn't seem right.
But I get the impetus. At least it's slower than Blitz, which is good.
Yeah.
Okay. So it looks like in a very short amount of time, you're picking up several hundred points. This must mean some level of success. Or are you feeling like, yes, working on basic tactics is paying off?
Yeah, that one was a big one. And then the other thing I did right around then, so I'm also a computer programmer, and I wrote an interface, like a command line interface for Anki, A-N-K-I, this spaced repetition flashcard system.
Yeah.
And so I came up with a way to make my own flashcards like this. And so I started turning the Polgar books into flashcards. Oh. And so I would drill myself with those, actually. And it had the spaced repetition built into it.
Nice. And
I like that too, because it meant that wherever I was, I could like just whip it out and do my five flashcards I was supposed to do right then. And
that's cool.
Yeah, it's a nice setup. And I've used that a lot with other things. Like I've started putting my own positions for my own games and flashcards that way. And
Okay, that's cool. So it's not just reading the books, but drilling them with spaced repetition. Did you feel like your goal was to memorize certain positions, or did you just feel like if I do this subset of tactics enough, I'll just have like some basic patterns ingrained in my brain?
Yeah, so I don't think I was quite... Right. So everybody describes chess. If non-chess players describe chess as pattern recognition, right? And they would always say this to me as a mathematician. It's all about pattern recognition, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as I started to play chess, I convinced myself pretty early on that it didn't mean pattern recognition in the sense that they did. Like they thought you were just like memorizing the whole board or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right.
And so I convinced myself that was not what was going on. And so I was also convinced that there's no point in trying to actually memorize my flashcards, right? I was basically recalculating them from scratch every time.
Okay.
It's only more recently that I've realized that once you've actually played enough games and seen enough positions, you actually do start to see like most of the board when you've seen a position enough times, right? When you've seen a motif enough times. But I'm sort of amazed how much they kind of layer on top of each other like that, how you have to know enough chess to learn the next level of chess somehow.
Yeah, I definitely agree. There's like just moves that my coach, I've been with the same coach for like 2 years now, and I know he showed me a move before, and I've been like, whatever, knight c4 looks kind of blah. And then when we went through the same thing again, like the whole same opening, I was like, I don't know how to play against the Benoni. And he's like, we've had three lessons on that. And I was like, sure, but I don't remember them. I don't remember what we were talking about. And now I'm like, yes, the knight belongs on c4. Whereas the first time around, I was like, that doesn't even make sense to me. But I had to have, like you said, that layer of knowledge where now this new piece of knowledge fits into something. And like, it's like a puzzle locking together. Whereas before, it was like a random piece and I couldn't figure out how to fit in the puzzle. And so then I lost the piece under the table for like 8 months. I'm just making up analogies right here on the fly.
It's
I
working. It's keep running with
don't know. Okay, so that's cool. It sounds like this space repetition is helping you get the patterns down. What's the next step? Is this continue your progress? Because it looks like you're just steadily up for like another 6 months here.
Yeah, I think it's like beginning of 2024 when I took a dive. And two things happened there. The first one was I decided to learn the Sicilian as black, and that was a train wreck. And what I figured out was that at the level I was playing, right into players' preparation, and they just knew things better than I did, right? The
Oh, interesting.
Sicilian, the people were playing, yeah, that's what I was experiencing, I guess, or it was like people joke around, like the Sicilian's too powerful, you can't control it. So I didn't know what to do with it, and I just got destroyed several times.
What caused you to switch to the Sicilians?
So I've sort of had this. I like trying to play into openings that other people aren't going to n aren't going. I like playing into openings that I can force, right? So when e4 c5, like we're playing a Sicilian, you don't get a choice in the matter, right? And so I sort of liked that because it meant I could immediately steer the game the way that I wanted to. It's just I can't control that car at all. I had a stint with the Caro Kann similarly a few years beforehand, and I just found like I would get into these horrible passive positions and get squished too often, so I couldn't control that one either, I guess. I think I also fell prey to that thing that adults do where it's like, well, that opening doesn't work, I'll try something else, right?
I lost twice with this opening. It's
Yeah,
trapped.
that's right.
How long did you stick with the Sicilian? Were you with it for a while?
I think I played it online for about 3 months before I broke it out at a tournament, and then I think it was like two tournaments maybe. This is weird. Your background is sharp and you are not sharp, and so it looks like you just got real close to the camera.
And now I just fixed it. Okay, so you played it for a little while, you prepped it to get ready,
And it was
and then
doing
you went to the
fine online,
tournament.
but then over the board, I just there were sort of I didn't I sort of wasn't comfortable enough with the positions to really know what I was doing with it.
The Sicilian definitely feels like an opening that you grow with, right? Like it's kind of a there's a lot there, there's a lot happening. Also, although you said like you get to steer the car when you played the Sicilian, I always didn't feel that way because I was like, all right, I got my Nidorf ready. And they were like, Alapin, Rasalimo. And I was like, come on, guys, would you just play the Nidorf? I spent like, all of my time memorizing all these moves, and now no one is going to play them. And it was maddening for me. It's one of the main reasons why I stopped playing it.
It feels like something I might go back to one day, but it's not there for me now.
Yeah, me too. I dabble with it in Blitz. Whenever, if you ever check my ratings graph on chess.com and you see a huge dip in Blitz, it's because I played the Sicilian for a little while to try to get the hang of it and it did not work out.
Nope, put it back in the closet.
So what happened? You went through the Caro, you went through the Sicilian. Did you go to another place that you felt better, or did you continue bouncing for a while?
I always come back to e5 as the response to e4. Yeah, always come back to that. So the Sicilian was one thing that happened, and the other thing that happened took me a lot longer to diagnose, which was I thought I was an aggressive player, but it turns out I was not an aggressive player.
Okay, fair.
I like didn't know how to attack.
Okay.
And yeah, so sometime in late 2024, I ended up getting a coach who looked at several of my games, and I would say, this is kind of typical for me. I'll play this like ridiculously long game that's completely balanced. We go to an end game, which maybe I win because I'm decent at end games, but maybe I draw or lose. And
Fair
I
enough.
feel like somehow not all games are supposed to go to end games like this. What am I doing wrong? And so she helped me find, she started studying classical attacking games with me.
Okay.
And it was sometime during that when we were working on those that I realized I'm not retaining any of these games.
Uh-oh.
I think I push H4 every once in a while. Maybe that's the idea of these, right? But at some point I started saying, all right, maybe I'm just going to memorize some games and like really try and get a few games down and understand some basic ideas. And that's been helping a ton.
Oh, interesting. So did you pick especially like games that were especially noteworthy for their attacks, or are you picking games in your opening? Like, how did you go about picking those games?
Yeah, so left to my own devices, I would have picked things in my opening, but these were games that my coach was suggesting. And so they were classic games of one sort or another, you know, Immortal Game, Evergreen Game, various Morphe games, Bobby Fischer games. And so I just kind of rolled with that because there are good ideas in those structures, even if I don't play the opening, right? And so I'm starting to see things like, you know, I don't really know the French super well, but there's this idea in the Caro that I tried. I've seen a few times. I can try that in the French because we ended up in this advanced variation or something, you know. So some things like that. So that's been the odyssey I've been on lately is actually memorizing games and really drilling those, you know, key positions in those.
That's really interesting because I have zero games memorized. I've never gone down that path, and I've always been curious of people who did. So you feel like memorizing games has just sort of unlocked some opening ideas that are like sort of typical attacking ideas in those in those games?
Yeah, definitely. Looking for certain things that are available in the position and exploiting those. And then the other part that it's added is it's unlocked more of this chunking phenomenon where I can kind of see parts of the board and go, that looks like this, that looks like this. And I'm finding that really valuable.
Interesting. So is your goal to kind of add as many games into your like online accessible library that you have in your brain? Or are you just kind of like, I just want to memorize 10 and then I'm going to do other stuff?
I'm trying to be deliberate about it because, like I said, I get really obsessive about things. So I'm scoping this to games that are less than about 25 moves, so miniatures. And they have to have something new to me or something, you know, clever in it. So not like a game that ended, you know, in a cute tactic or something 6 moves in, but something where there's an actual instructive idea in it.
Okay, that makes sense. So something like didn't castle the king early enough, ended up getting burned in the middle of the board, or like castled, abandoned the king's safety with two bishops pointed at it, and now we know this idea.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and so there's one book that I found really good for this by Ataman, Ataman, called Instructive Chess Miniatures. I
I
heard
don't
about this
know.
on one of Ben Johnson's podcasts. It's really
Nice.
good, and it's exactly what it purports to be.
Okay. And is it a lot of really famous games in
It's sort of half and half, actually. I mean, like it starts out with the Evergreen game,
Okay.
but well. Yeah, and then later on, there are games by people I've never heard of before. So I think it wanders the gambit or the
Yeah.
gamut.
It makes sense. It'd be hard to have a quote new book and you're like, yeah, you've seen all these games.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so that's cool. That sounds like an interesting way to do this. And so you feel like this really has helped you. Have you been doing other stuff alongside it, like working on tactics and like tactical motifs, or has this been your way of engaging with tactics?
No, so this has not been my way of engaging with tactics. So I've been working with one strategy book, so Weir Mentry's Best Lessons of a Chess Coach. So that one's got lots of games in it, so I found lots in there. And then the tactics book that I'm working out of right now is the one that you recommended, 100 Tactical Patterns You Must Know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I needed a new tactics book because I've been through a bunch of easier ones and I wanted one that kind of leveled up on those ideas. So your review of it was exactly at the right moment I needed it.
Okay, perfect. And have you been finding that book to be useful?
Yeah, I really like this book a lot, actually, for all the reasons that you said you liked it, but I also like it for the reasons you said you don't like it.
Ooh, nice. Okay.
Yeah, that was the hot take I mentioned.
Okay, let's hear it.
Put that book aside for a second. So there's the book, How to Beat Your Dad at Chess. which like everybody's read. It's an awesome book. And I used to find this book kind of frustrating when I first read it, and even when I like read it the second time, because it doesn't spell out all the lines, right? So it'll say like, this is available in this position. You do this, and then your opponent does this. And I would always be like, but what if my opponent doesn't do that, right? They don't have to. And the thing I wasn't strong enough to realize was, well, look at that other move. That's just a worse move. Like it's just strictly worse than this thing, right? But it didn't spell that out. And so I think that same thing is not true of this 100 Tactical Patterns You Must Know book. Like they spell out all the lines in this book, and they really make you calculate everything. And so the way that I've been using it is I set up the position in Lee Chess and actually just stare at it for, you know, however long until I find what's going on. And as you pointed out, like you already know what the tactical pattern is when you set it up, like it's whatever chapter you're in, right? So sometimes you just spot it immediately. And if that's the case, then what I do is try to push myself one move further than I usually do. And because that's, I mean, I make that mistake in games a lot where I just forget to calculate one move further, and that was the move that actually loses the game.
Oh yeah, I know it well.
So I try to do that with the easy ones. And then with the harder ones, like you try to go as deep as you can to understand what's going on, or you know, it's fun. It's like there are these five moves you have to do to set up the pattern or something. So I try to do that to myself. So I use it kind of as half tactics, half calculation book.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it sounds like we're using the book differently, right? Like I was trying to use it as like a very basic tactic book of like, these are the basic 100 tactics. And you're saying like, no, I think it's a good calculation tool because it's giving me sort of a hint. This is the type of calculation I need to look for, but I still have to do all the work of calculating. So I think that's a really good idea.
And then I set them up in Lee Chess so I can copy them right into my flashcards from there.
Oh, right. Yeah. Then you can put them into Anki and then you can space repetition them. Yeah. I've been space repetitioning the book. I think I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago. The way I did it is I've got the book and that's my main way of using it, but I got the Chessable course and I'm just selecting the most emblematic example of each of the examples. So my Chessable course will be exactly 100 puzzles that I have clicked on. So when I hit the review button, it only cycles those 100, which are the prime examples. It's been my way of trying to like imprint the pattern into my brain because I don't think you can space repetition as easily. The calculations ones you're talking about, they're so deep that that's not what I would want to use those for. That would be, I like how you're using those. You set up on a board, the super easy one, that one you space repetition.
So that's a good point, actually. And so the way, so I've been putting those into my flashcards as well, but the way that I've been drilling them is not by actually recalculating everything on the fly. It's just by identifying what the theme is.
Ah,
And then in a game, if you see that, you go, oh, that's the theme. Now I calculate,
okay.
right?
Interesting. So your goal is to identify the theme. Maybe you don't get every specific move, but you're like, I'm pretty confident given, you know, enough time, I would be able to find it.
I mean, a great example of this, in like every book, there's a description of the Greek gift, right? And the Greek gift has like eight different things that can happen after you start the thing. And I think it's like quantum mechanics. Like anybody who says they understand the Greek gift doesn't, right? So it, right, but you just have to calculate it on the fly and see if it's if all the things are there to make it work. The trick is to just see that the elements are there.
Right. And I think the Greek gift in that book, in 100 Tactics You Must Patterns You Must Know, is the most elaborate version I've ever seen. Like he's like, there's the Greek gift. Let me just show you how it works. And it's like 28 moves. I was like, what is even happening? Because I don't have it on a board. I'm just reading it in my bed and I'm like, I can't follow 28 moves of calculations. I thought this was the Greek
It's
gift.
not a
You're
reading.
sacking your mate.
Yeah, it's not a try to do it blindfold in bed kind of book at all.
No, and I think that was kind of the problem is I made the assumption it was. And so it's like, yeah, and I think that's been interesting hearing lots of people review it because they're all reviewing it from a different point, right? I'm going blindfold in bed. Ben Johnson had it on forward chess so he could kind of just click through the moves. And when he didn't understand, he didn't care. He's just like, boom, 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 boom. You're like, no, I'm going to use it as a calculation exercise. And who knows what other people are doing. So if nothing else, that makes the book a massive success because I feel like a wide variety of people can access it with different purposes and they're still getting the 100 really critical patterns.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
Okay. So that's the book you're currently working on. Is that the book that got you 130 rating points at your recent event, or is it past that event?
No, the 130 points at that event was like studying games, just like really, really sticking attacking ideas in my head. And I ended up with some really good attacking games in the openings I knew.
Okay, that's cool. So you kind of went like all in studying attacks, and then just they just show up in your games.
Kind of elements of them, ideas of them.
Yeah. I find that to be the case too. Whatever I'm studying, that's what I see in my games. If I'm reading a book on pawn breaks, I'm like, oh my goodness, there's all the pawn breaks. And then I read a different book and then I don't see any pawn breaks. I'm like, I don't understand, brain. Why do I have to be doing the things for you to put it together? Just remember pawn breaks. Yeah, it's kind of maddening. Okay. So that was your big attacking tournament. I'm curious, how do you feel about your rating? So you started all the way down in 774. We're like not even 2 years later. You're up to 1430. You go up in every tournament other than your Sicilian disaster. What do you think is the reason? You think you're just learning really fast? You think you're perpetually underrated because you just don't get enough rated games in? What do you think is going on with your rating?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm not sure, right? I mean, if rating is like a statistical measure of roughly what you should be rated at, then like I guess we're finding out where I'm actually rated. I think maybe it's probably more true that it's a measure of kind of how bad your worst moves are. Mm. And I'm tightening some of those things up is what I'm finding.
Okay.
Yeah, but you know, I don't really know, right? Like I'm playing in a tournament this coming weekend.
Hmm.
And I have to say, like, even though I've just said I'm doing all this other studying and playing, the majority of my prep for this tournament has been convincing myself I actually deserve to be a 1400 so that I cannot get destroyed immediately.
Okay. Yeah. That is a hard part of chess. I feel like it's the very few people who are like, no, I'm actually a 1900. I'm just rated 1400. Everyone else is like, has imposter syndrome. They're like, I don't know about this game. I don't know. Yeah. Very, very interesting. Okay. So, any specific prep you're doing for this? Are you doing 100 tactical patterns? You must know. Are you drilling basic tactics patterns as well? Like, are you doing like chess.com puzzles or anything like that?
Yeah, I've been doing chess.com puzzles. I find that they sort of throw all sorts of things at you, and that's really valuable. And I try to always do those, not as the click-through approach, but to try and see everything through to the, you know, final conclusion of it.
Okay, so you're doing some of that. Are you working on your openings now, or do you kind of have a thing where you're like, I have my repertoire, I play it, I don't really, like, study it regularly? How do you deal with openings?
Yeah, so spaced repetition again. When I was at one of those quads tournaments, there was a kid there that I played who told me about this app called Chessbook.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it's an app that lets you build a repertoire for white, repertoire for black, and then it does spaced repetition. But it does two things that are really, are you familiar with it?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, it does two things that I think are really cool. So one of them is you can set a ratings goal, or sorry, not a rating goal, a coverage goal. Mm. And so it will sort of prod you to fill out moves that are seen in, you know, at least one out of every 50 games.
Yeah, that's a really cool element of that.
Right. I know, that's a really clever feature to add. And so, like, I can be sort of probabilistically sure that mm-hmm. what's in there will show up most of the time for me, right? And then you can go deeper if you want to. And then the other thing it does is every time you play a game on chess.com or Lead Chess, it actually pulls those games and tells you when you made mistakes in your opening and shows you, which I think is really great. So I've drilled some core elements really well.
Okay. So do you go through every couple of weeks or so and just check to make sure you're not making tons of errors, or are you doing it more regularly than that?
Oh, no, I do it daily. I mean, it'll tell me, like, here were the mistakes and here's 10 moves you should practice today.
Nice.
So, yeah, I just bang those out usually, like, while I'm brushing my teeth or something.
Okay. So it's just like a little maintenance kind of thing you do for your opening rather than like deep study every day.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm trying to lean into the thing people have said where, like, you know, nobody at my level is that booked up. And mm-hmm. so, yeah. So that said, though, I do like Nate Solon's suggestion of, you know, try to add the first move that was out of your prep, as long as it wasn't just something bizarre. And so I try to do that whenever it seems reasonable.
Yeah. I like that approach as well. Mm-hmm. I don't always remember them, but I like to check them at least.
Yeah, that's the hard part is being deliberate about practice, right? Like there are times where it's just fun to sit down and play a bunch of bullet games and not think too hard.
I don't play bullet, but blitz for me is my bullet. But yeah, I hear you.
What's your time control?
3-2 is what I generally play for blitz. But I was a 5-5 player forever, and it was more because I wanted to play in like Untitled Tuesdays, and I would try to play in 3-2, which is way too fast. And so then I started practicing it. It'd probably be better if I had just stuck to 5-5, but oh well, that's where I am now.
I like 5-5, but I started playing 3-2 and 2-1 because those were the only time controls where I could be reasonably certain I wouldn't get interrupted by a kid or a pet. I just stood a better chance of finishing a game at that time control.
I can understand that. My kids are a little bit older now, and I can kind of get away with like tonight I'm going to play like a 30-minute game on the Chestnut board here, and it's such a great feeling to know that the kids are like, okay, Kevin, our dad is playing his long chess game. He's a weirdo. Well, we can just do our own thing. Yeah, so it's this has been very, very interesting. You mentioned something earlier that we didn't follow up on. You said like I kept getting to these end games. I didn't really know how to handle them. Have you spent a lot of time with Endgame since then? Or were you like, no, here's the answer. I'll just be more attacking and beat everyone before the end game.
Yeah, so that's what I want.
Okay.
No, but I did do so. I read a big chunk of Silman's Complete Endgame course, and I
Okay.
just like the King and Pawn endgames and all those theoretical things. So I sort of had in my head that like I was pretty decent at these things. I could do opposition and stuff like that. And whenever I end up with something very pure, I can usually do pretty well. But the games that I would lose that would go to an endgame would be the one where you had one opportunity to centralize your king, and if you miss it, you've lost the game, right? And so that was the kind of thing that I still needed to touch up on.
Okay. And have you tried to improve those things?
No, I lost a game just like that yesterday.
Okay. All right. Well, if you ever want to, I feel like Endgame Strategy is a really great book for the non-pure end games. It's just like I've got a bunch of pawns. They've got a bunch of pawns. I literally have no idea what to do. After reading that book, I still lose plenty of end games. I shouldn't lose, but I feel way better about it. It's just to me, it was probably the most important single book in my just like chess understanding. So I definitely recommend it. I also recommend the original one. I know the new one's better. The original one is shorter, it's a little purer. The new one is a lot of like Shereshevski was wrong here for the following reasons. And to be honest, I don't care if he was wrong. I just want like the basics, right? Of like centralize your king. Okay, I learned that basic idea. Do not hurry. Okay, I learned that basic idea. I don't need to know every place where he was wrong. But some people, if you want to know every place he was wrong, by all means, get the new one. I'm sure it's better. Shanklin is happy to tear apart poor Shereshevski and all his heirs, of which there are many. Yeah, it's a good one. I highly recommend
Good tip. I wrote that down.
it. All right. You said you got a coach. How'd that work? Are you still having coaching? What was your motivation for coaching? And I guess did you try a bunch of coaches, or you just find one the first try and get lucky?
Yeah, so I've only worked with I've worked with two coaches so far. So the first coach was like during COVID. I actually totally forgot until you just asked this. During COVID, I stumbled across some group lessons with a local candidate master. And I was enjoying those a little bit. Like we would blast through some positions. It was group lessons, and so there were a handful of other people on. And at some point I realized like I think this guy's just like he moves too fast for me. Like his brain works very different from mine, and maybe that's okay. Maybe this just isn't the coaching experience for me. And so I stopped going to those. And then yeah, at the end of last year I decided that I was not feeling like I was improving, not because my rating wasn't going anywhere, but because I just, the way I was thinking about chess wasn't changing at all. I wasn't like understanding new things. I was just kind of training. And that was when I went to, I went to Lee Chess's list of coaches. And I was just like, all right, how am I going to choose from all of these people? And I
Yeah,
decided that one of the things I understood was there's not enough money in women's chess. So
okay.
I picked a female coach, picked somebody that I could afford, and started working with her. So that was Jovana Milosevic, and she was great. Yeah, she was fantastic. And so she was the one who had me working through lots of games, giving me calculation puzzles and things. And so I stopped working with her at a point because I'm like professionally busy, and so I have lots of things going on. And what I kind of needed was somebody who was going to say, so did you play three games? Let's look at those games, right? Like, did you do the homework? Let's look at the homework, right? I wasn't getting the accountability that I wanted. And I think just wasn't her style.
You know?
So that's fine. That's fine. And so I'm thinking about getting some more coaching right now. But I had the weirdest realization. So I was thinking about going to Nate Solon, right? Mm-hmm. He offers like some number of lessons for a certain amount of dollars.
Yeah.
And then I realized I've been reading his Substack every week, and he's like basically telling me what he's probably going to tell me in his first couple lessons. Like, he just said it in his most recent Substack, where he was like, look, you're going to study White and Black. You're going to keep track of your repertoires. You're going to play a game. You're going to dump it in a Lee chess study, and then you're going to make flashcards out of it or some way to study the position. And I realized he's literally telling me what to do. Maybe I should just listen.
Okay. All right.
So yeah, so I'm trying.
So Nate Solon is your coach. You're just
he doesn't realize it, but he's coaching me.
All right, Nate. Sorry, buddy. I have a feeling you would gain more insights working more closely with him.
That seems correct. Yeah.
In a perfect world where I had infinite time and infinite money, I would have like six different coaches.
Yeah.
And Nate would certainly be one of them. He seems like he would be a wonderful coach.
I like the way that he focuses on thought process, because that's key for me. I need to know how to make my brain work differently in games.
Yes, I can agree with that. Okay, well, let's talk goals real quick, because like, I mean, if ratings was your goal, you've already gained so many rating points. Like, do you have some goal to gain 700 more rating points in another year? Do you have process goals? Like, what are you hoping to accomplish in chess?
Yeah, so I think what I want to do is so the sort of unofficial goal right now is to get to 1800 by the time I turn 50. So 45 right now, right? So I got 5 years to do that. And it's not so much that I want to be 1800 for any particular reason, right? Like, you know, I don't think you get a trophy.
You do. USCF sends you a trophy. No, I don't know.
That's new. Okay, that's new news. Breaking here.
I'll send you one if you hit it.
I've started noticing that, like, every time I sort of break through some plateau and get to some new level, I can look and go, oh, I actually do kind of understand a lot more than I did before. And you can kind of look back at your older games and see what was going on. You understand games of players rated several hundred points below you.
Yeah.
And I think just that I picked 1800 as a number from which I would like to stand at that vantage and look back and say, what do I understand now that I didn't before?
Nice. Okay.
So that's a goal.
So it's not like, if I don't make this, it'll be so many tears. And if I do make it, I'll hang up a mission accomplished banner. It's just a number.
I mean, if I end up in that like 1795 perpetually and can't quite get there, yeah, I'll probably get kind of frustrated.
Yeah. I've been kind of doing that. I keep getting up to like late 1700, but then I drop like 100 points. So, you know, like we say, your rating is kind of a mixture of like your best and worst moves, and you know, any tournament you can play better or worse.
Yeah.
Before we go, I do have to ask you a math question, because I have a total misconception of what a professional mathematician is like. I thought it was all certainty and you trying to discover new things about math that someone hadn't discovered, and that would be the frustration. I'm kind of shocked to hear that math is about being lost and confused. Explain to me in a simpleton's terms what you're talking about.
Well, the goal is to get unconfused, but if you're doing the math right, then what you're doing is asking questions that you're curious about, that you want to understand, and which aren't obvious from the collection of things that you know, right? And so then what you do is you sit there and kind of puzzle through what's going on, and do I actually understand enough to even answer this question? Let me go read some things. Let me talk to some people. And eventually you start to kind of clarify a plan for figuring it out. And that plan might be do a thought experiment, do a computer calculation, and try to confirm something about what you know, set up a program to make kind of baby steps towards the solution, and then you go there. And I mean, there is a lot of commonality between that and figuring out what you're going to do in some kind of a chess puzzle, where you're like, man, it would be pretty sweet if my queen were on that square. Like, that's checkmate. There's a bunch of stuff in between me and there. Is there any world in which I can clear all the stuff away in between? You try one line and it doesn't work. So now you're okay. Well, I'm confused. That doesn't work. You try another line, that doesn't work. But this one line almost works. What's going on there? And so it's the same. It's chess is sort of a microcosmic version of the way that a professional mathematician thinks about a problem. But the beauty is that it's all self-contained and just on 64 squares.
Yeah. Okay. Fascinating stuff. I don't know. I don't know how many similarities there are with a historian. Historians were often working with like evidence and then trying to figure out how to interpret the evidence. I guess so. It's a kind of a different approach.
I mean, David McCulloch talked about how he'd have one idea in mind and then he'd go to some archives and start reading things and be like, wait, I don't think I'm writing the correct book here. And we just sort of lose himself figuring out what the right story is.
Yeah, that certainly can happen. I've been more of an ancient historian, so the archives are more limited. It's more like, we've all read this person's work 1,000 times. Do I have this new lens that I'm putting it through kind of thing?
Yeah, they burned down Alexandria. You're out of luck.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of texts we've lost, unfortunately. But oh, well. Well, Xander, this has been a fascinating conversation. It's fun to see someone who is like in the middle of their rise to glory. And, you know, I hope your rise to glory keeps happening. Like, this is amazing.
Well, thanks so much. This was a lot of fun. Thanks for the chat.
If someone wants to get a hold of you, what's maybe a good place to reach out to you?
Yeah, so I bailed on social media almost entirely. I mean, it makes more time for chess. It's got that. But I'm happy to take messages on chess.com and on Lee Chess. My username on there is Rational Point. Actually, I don't know if it's case sensitive, capital R, capital P, Rational Point.
Rational Point. Okay, nice. And you are happy to take questions. Do you play lots of daily games still, or are you like, no, I'm done with the daily games? Those are
probably one or two here and there. The problem is that I play them like I do over the board games, and so I'll sit down and really stare at a position for 10 minutes while I'm drinking coffee, and that's 10 minutes that I'm not training in some other way. So I try to limit those.
Okay, fair enough. Yep. Well, Xander, thanks so much for coming on. Really fun chat. For you out there, I hope this is the period where you're gaining, you know, 700 points in a year and a half. I did it once as well. It felt so good. It felt so good. Hopefully you're not like me now and like, hey, why can't I gain any more points? So either way, come back next week. We'll have another fun guest for you to help you improve your chess. I'll see you later, everybody. Have a good one. Goodbye.